There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It's time for us to invite an influencer into the studio to talk about themselves. It's something we're going to call Making Tracks in the coming weeks and months, and it is an absolute pleasure to welcome into the studio our first guest for Making Tracks this morning, where basically we look for influential names, voices, leaders in their respective industries, and we ask them to come into the studio to talk about their background, their life, their education, their experiences, and of course, why Dubai? Why the UAE? And look ahead to the future. And then on top of that, we ask them to select four songs that sum up the significant moments in their life and their journey here towards the UAE. And so on to our first guest this morning, the first of the Making Tracks highlights. And it goes to an individual, a guest who's navigated multiple careers over three continents across fewer than three industries. First as a decade-long academic research scientist and university lecturer back in his native Australia. Then as a corporate technical consultant in Europe before setting up here in the UAE as a management consultant and entrepreneur, identifying early in his illustrious career that scientific principles are as powerful when applied to solving business challenges as they are for scientific challenges. He founded Ebtekar, which we'll talk about a little later on in the show, which is a boutique advisory that's obsessed with turning the art of disruptive innovation into a science. It is an absolute pleasure to welcome into the studio our first guest for Making Tracks, the one and only Dr. Peter Stoyanov. Peter, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the first inaugural show.
It's really kind of you to take up the challenge, as you were. You are going to set this bar very, very high for all those that follow in the weeks and months and hopefully years to come.
Inshallah. That's what we're here for.
What I want to do, if we can, is to break things up into segments. And there's no better place to start out than the beginning. So we're going to go back to your roots, if that's all right, because people that meet you for the very first time will see your name. I introduce you as Dr. Peter Stoyanov, but you spell Peter with an A as well, which suddenly speaks of heritage and background. You've obviously got a very proud Australian accent there as well. So take us back way when. How and when did you come to this planet?
So it all happened back in, well, I'm giving a lot up when I say 1981, but July. It was the stars and the planets aligned, and on July 17th, 1981, I came into being. But it was... as you can tell from the accent, as you mentioned, Tom, I come from Australia, and I've lost many things, but I think the Australian accent's probably one that I'll never lose. Mm. But as you said, the name belies a background or a heritage. I'm actually the son of two migrant parents from the country of Macedonia. And what's really funny is that my mum and dad actually live 3.5 kilometers from one another. I checked it on Google Maps not long ago. And they never met. It was only until they both migrated to Australia in different circumstances. My father when he was much later, my mother when she was much younger, and finally both families settled in Australia, and that's when they met. And it's actually a funny story about how they met, because
tell me about your mum and dad. What sort of people were they?
My parents are, I mean, obviously, I have a bias towards them, but they really are wonderful people. And the thing is that in us growing up, I think what I would say about my mom in particular is that she is such a strong, such an independent woman, and yet was able to bring up three children. So I'm the oldest of three, and I have a younger brother and a younger sister. And my father, what's interesting about him is he doesn't have a very deep education. Neither of my parents went into university, but my father has developed these heuristics about life. And it's really interesting that as much as I rebelled against it when I was young, everything that he says is not guided by academic theory or anything like that, but it's actually guided by the fact that he learnt as he went along in his life.
But that said, has your mother also instilled the importance of education into you? We see that so often, don't we, from migrants going to other parts of the world looking to make a statement for themselves.
Absolutely. And the product of that is when I went to university, I went to a very normal state school. Obviously, I came from a background where you can imagine as a first generation, you know, it was tough growing up. Mm. And I went, as I mentioned, to a public school, the same school that my brother and sister ended up going to. What's wonderful about Australia is those opportunities are there, not based on where you come from, but based on your competency and ability. And so I was actually able to get an Australian government award to study at university and then to continue on to do my PhD. And to give you an idea of what my parents are like is to show you the result of what came out of their three kids.
Yeah.
So I'm the first to have a PhD, but both my brother and my sister both have PhDs as well. So actually,
this is
my parents,
high-achieving family.
We do okay for ourselves. So my brother's a PhD in aerospace engineering. He does 3D printing of titanium sintering, and he makes high-precision aerospace parts. So he was actually working in France for a little while, and he's back in Australia now. And my sister has a wish to basically change the course of justice for refugees. So her ambition, she's finishing her PhD at the moment, is to work at the International Court of Justice in Haiti.
Extraordinary. Yeah. You mentioned there about the values of education instilled by your parents. It wasn't just education, I understand, though. Music ran through the house, is that right?
So music runs very selectively through the house. So actually the way that mum and dad met was dad was playing trumpet at a gig, and it turns out that's where I wasn't there for the story. So I'm only hearing this in the tales that my parents tell. But they actually met there. So my father apparently wooed my mother with his trumpet and on stage and that's how they met. And a funny story is that actually when I was about 6 years old, I was a little bit bored on summer holidays. I was between kindergarten and grade one. And what actually happened was that I found dad's trumpet in the cupboard. And what ended up happening was that I'd seen how a trumpet was played on TV. I'd never seen my dad actually play it, but as I recall. And I actually took it out of its box and I started to fit the mouthpiece to the trumpet. So I sort of figured out how all of this stuff went. And mum was watching me, but she didn't say anything. She just, my parents have a very non-interventionist policy on childhood. So I basically played around with it and then started to play Baa Baa Black Sheep, apparently, as a six-year-old. And my mum just let me be. My lips were super red, but I was determined to see if I can make this thing work. And it was on that basis when dad came home, mum had a chat with him, and they said, I think we have to send this kid to music lessons.
I want to get music involved because, as I said, you've got the option to choose four songs that mean something to you. I'm looking at the titles that I've got in front of me as well. We've got a bit of Tom Jones up first.
Absolutely.
Explain why.
All right. So in my house, as you guys can figure out, I'm old enough to have been around at a time when records existed. And Tom Jones was a favorite both of mum and dad, and they used to love playing it. And there's one particular song that they played, which is It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones. So that song is imprinted in my memory.
Let's have a little listen in.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry. I wanna die. It's not unusual to go out at any time. But when I see you out and about, it's such a crime. If you should ever wanna be loved by anyone, it's not unusual, it happens every day. No matter what you say, you'll find it happens all the time. Love will never do what you want to do. Why can't this crazy love be more?
We are joined by Dr. Peter Stoyanov, who's live in studio with us. He's making tracks with us, talking through his journey here to the UAE, both personal but also professional. We talked about that early life, the inspiration that your parents have brought to you, instilling the importance of music to a certain degree, education to a major degree as well. So let's talk more about that education, because we all have those moments, don't we, as kids growing up there. We're trying to work out, what do we want to do? What are we good at? What we want to do? Is it the art? arts? Is it the sciences? Is it a combination of the two? I mean, did you ever have one of those moments you had to go to a careers officer and they said, Peter, what do you want to be?
Yes, all the time. And so my major one was realizing that perhaps as a musician, I actually did pretty well at it. And being the kind of objective-oriented person that I was, I started playing at 12 years of age. Mm. And at 17, I actually graduated with an associate diploma in music performance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the people I was standing next to, the guy on my left, I remember my graduation. I still remember it. I was 17 or 18 years old at the time. And the guy next to me was 45, and the guy next to me on this side was 65. So I was sort of this very tall basketball-playing 17-year-old, but dressed obviously very skinny and dressed in this interesting outfit. I've since gotten to wear a few of those outfits. So that was really really important. But my major decision was actually giving up music because I realized that I simply couldn't do both or couldn't do justice to the two things that I was interested in. And one was I've always been fascinated with how things work. I used to love taking stuff apart, not as often putting the same things back together, but this is you got to break things to move forward. So I was always fascinated with those things, and an opportunity arose to go to university in a special program where you can actually do two undergraduate degrees that are 4 years each. You can do the both of them together in 5 years. So these are concurrent degree programs which are offered in Australia. And decided to pursue that as a career. Obviously, my parents were a little bit disappointed because they said, you've made this investment into music. But I didn't know it back then and have since realized that following all of these different directions actually molds your brain in a particular way to be able to solve problems. And so much of what I did in music is still available to me in a very creative and artistic sense, even when I'm solving, for example, complex business innovation challenges.
I mean, because you've gone down the route, you've taken that decision for want of a better phrase or term, academia. You've gone down a very academic line. I mean, but you've gone down a very, very academic line because quantum physics is not one of those stories that is often broken out around dinner tables and everyone goes, oh, yes, well, I've got a little story on. Why quantum physics for you? What was the attraction?
Hey, listen, if you want to understand the nature of the universe, for me, that's a question worth answering. Yeah. And so for me, it was absolutely fascinating. Actually, one very formative part of when I was going through my undergraduate degrees was my professor. And I've worked with him for almost 10 years. His name is Professor John Riley, back home at La Trobe University in Australia. And he was so formative in actually helping me to develop my passion. And really the passion there was understanding how stuff works. I've always been really curious as a kid. I mean, trying to find this instrument and then find a mouthpiece and how it attaches to the trumpet is simply representative of the kind of brain that I had. Mm. And I've always been like that. And I like to, sort of take things and deconstruct them, figure out how they work and then rebuild them. And so what was interesting about Professor Riley was he said to me, once we went through our through the undergraduate degree, he said, I'd like to make you an offer that I don't think you'll refuse. And I said, what's that, John? And he said, I'd like to send you to Germany for four times a year for the next 3 years to undertake sort of fundamental research in quantum physics on a machine that we developed back then in Australia. Unfortunately, back then in Australia, we didn't have a particle accelerator, and that's what was necessary to run this machine. And the one that we had was in Berlin, Germany. So I think back in 2005, they actually shipped this machine over there and we installed it at this particle accelerator. And so I joined this research group, but the problem was there were about six or seven of us. We're really like a small SWAT team, experts and specialists of various things, not like an army, but like a SWAT team. And the problem that I had was that I was the youngest and I was also unmarried. Everybody else was married. So instead of spending, as we should have, 2 weeks at a time, I was spending multiple months at a time. And it was an incredibly formative experience in my life.
Formative in terms of opening your eyes? I mean, you were an Aussie boy born and bred. You'd been brought up through that academic system. You'd taken funding from academia there as well. Was it difficult to drag yourself away from Oz?
It was, but then
first
I
First time.
It was the first. Well, that was actually pretty fun the first time, I'm going to say. It only became subsequently more fun later. But no, it was an incredibly formative experience. I would say that, and I'm thankful to the Australian government for affording young people the possibility to do those things. And I'm the recipient and a grateful recipient of an academic grant to be able to follow my PhD studies. And what was so formative about it was different country. I was 22 years old at the time and basically was living for and fending for myself. I was cooking my own meals and doing all those sorts of things. And also at the same time, running multiple international research programs with people from seven different countries. And yeah, it was absolutely a formative time in my life.
What could possibly go wrong? You know, mid-20s, intelligent, on top of your game, working in an exciting field, on your own, single, in Germany.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot of stories that we can tell, but some of those have to stay.
Okay, why don't we leave it? What was the soundtrack of that era for you?
Okay, so in 2007, 2007, I'd like to say, was the year of Peter. And anybody who listens to this and was part of Peter's journey in 2007, when they hear this song, they're going to know what part they played. So, yeah, this song is Justin Timberlake, My Love. I'm another woman that can take your spot, my...
If I wrote you a symphony just to say how much you mean to me,
what would you do?
If I told you you were beautiful, would you date me on the regular?
Would you?
Well, baby, I've been around the world, but I ain't seen myself another girl
like you.
This ring here represents my heart, but there's just one thing I need.
Holding hands, walking on the beach, our toes in the sand. I can see us on the countryside, sitting on the grassland side by side. You could be my baby, let me make you my lady. Girl, you amaze me, ain't gotta do nothing crazy. See, all I want you to do is be my love.
So don't give away
my love.
Wanna let a chance go by, cause you ain't been seen with a man so fly. Baby, friend so fly, I can't go fly. Private cause I handle my B.I. They call me Candle Guy.
Why?
Simply cause I am on fire. I hate to have to cancel my vacation, so you can't deny. I'm patient, but I ain't gon' try. You don't come, I ain't gon' die. Hold up, what you mean you can't go? Why? Me and your boyfriend, we ain't no tie. You say you wanna kick it when I ain't so high. But baby, it's obvious that I ain't your guy. I ain't gon' lie, I'll be in your space. Don't forget your face, I swear I will.
St. Bart's, Anguilla, anywhere I cheer.
Just bring with me a pair, I will.
I can see us holding hands, walking on the beach, our toes in the sand. I can see us on the countryside, sitting on the grassland side by side. You could be my baby, when you're making my lady. Girl, you amaze me, ain't gotta do nothing crazy. See, all I want you to do is be my love. My love. My love. In the love.
Dr. Peter Stoyanov, who's in the studio with us at the moment. We have gone from Australia to Germany by way of Tom Jones and Justin Timberlake. That's how varied and diverse our conversation has been thus far. And I'm interested to take that a little further from a linear point of view. So Germany, you highlighted there, was very beneficial to you professionally, personally as well. If you were reveling in that space, if you were loving your work, if you were loving your space, you were loving what you were doing personally as well, why the UAE? What made you make that move from Europe to the Middle East and specifically to the UAE?
So one of them was that I just realized after 7 years doing a PhD and the experience that goes along with it, you can imagine it's not the easiest thing to do. And what I realized were a couple of things after that experience. One is that you have to do it once. If that's something that you want to do, it's important to take it through to its conclusion. But also what I realized is there's only so much impact one can have in that space. And for me, what I found was I was naturally drawn to this region, particularly because what I was trying to achieve was so aligned with the strategic objectives of Dubai as an emirate and the UAE as a country, as a federation of emirates, and what they were trying to achieve. So remember in 2015, rather, which was the year that I came here, it was the year of innovation. And so it's almost like my life path intersected in what I was trying to achieve with what the country itself was trying to achieve. So I think it was a fortuitous, perhaps a serendipitous circumstance that an opportunity happened to arise at the time when I was ready to take a plunge, let's say, and actually moved from Germany, from Berlin to here in Dubai. And it was an interesting time because I think I was, from the perspective of an academic scientist, not really exposed to some of the realities of life. And particularly in the business world, particularly in the corporate world, things move a lot differently than we might like to imagine on, you know, paper and in terms of academic frameworks and so on. So it really was, again, a second and perhaps even more fundamental experience.
Mm. Yeah? I just want to sort of delve into that a little deeper with just how straight, I mean, you must have thought long and hard about the move in the first place because you were in a good space coming over here as well. Was it a straightforward transition? Were there a few bumps along the way? Were there a few question marks?
Definitely in coming over. I think the decision itself was very easy. And in fact, what's interesting is some of the most formative decisions in my life, the decision to do a PhD, the decision to move from Germany to Dubai, were the most formative. And interestingly, were the ones that I spent the least time deciding and were the ones also that I was least informed about. So in my life, I've taken a number of decisions, some of them, you know, more impactful than others, but I would say those were perhaps the two most impactful ones. But moving to Dubai and deciding to come here was one of the decisions that I took was one of the quickest.
Peter, you mentioned 2015, four years ago or thereabouts now. You know, Dubai, the UAE, has achieved so much in such a short amount of time. You mentioned there the year of innovation. You mentioned the vision, the optimism, the ambition that's all here, all great and well. But equally, at the same time, you know, this is not renowned or has not been renowned until now, and certainly in 2015, as a center of academia, of academic research or scientific research as well. So that's what I suppose it surprises me, that it's almost this leap of faith. Were you convinced by the vision? And is the fact that we're still having this conversation, you're still here, sat in front of me, is that proving that vision has been seen through?
Well, not only that the vision's been seen through, but the fact that I was able to align what I had done in terms of the processes and frameworks and ways of thinking about solving problems with the challenges that are being faced here and these visions and ambitions that this country is aspiring to achieve. And so with a lot of them, the country as a whole and certainly the globe is moving in a space of increasing uncertainty. So we've seen what's happened around the globe, especially in the last couple of years. And in particular in this country, the bold ambition in where we're trying to go. I mean, think about it's for me, it's incredible. Think about this vision of landing people on Mars by 2117, if I'm not mistaken, or at least the missions in 2071. And so this idea of setting up a colony on Mars, I mean, this is so ambitious for such a small country. you know, in terms of total number of people. And yet they have this very bold ambition. I think so much of that resonated with what I was reading about. So, you know, that information, even back in 2015, was reaching the rest of the world. And certainly.
So what did you do in 2015? When you arrived, you've set up here, you come with your suitcases. What's the next move? What was your dream when you arrived?
So for me, it was actually very simple. It started a little bit earlier than that. So I was moving backwards and forwards and testing the waters. But finally, the decision was made in 2015 to come here. And I went and connected with people. And I tried to, you know, delve deeper into what it was that people were trying to achieve and who are the people who are making the biggest impact. And basically went on a discovery journey and spent probably the first 6 months moving from company to company, trying to figure out or to find my way about things. And I think the difficulty was I knew and understood that you could use scientific methods to actually improve business outcomes. But the problem was that I didn't understand how to tell that story. And remember that, especially in this region, deeply woven within the fabric of the Emirati culture is this idea of telling stories. Mm. And that's something that I didn't really know how to do. But the thing is, you give a quantum physicist some time and he'll figure it out eventually.
He'll figure it out somehow.
Exactly. And so what I realized was that I had to find what I like to call today the golden thread. And the golden thread is this idea of actually connecting what you can do and what you know with what's required in others. And so many of us are trapped, I would say, in things that we've studied. And it's called the sunk cost fallacy. It's this human cognitive bias that all of us suffer from. So this idea, and I've heard this so many times, and I've started to laugh it off, this idea that says, but you studied, you know, quantum physics. Why are you now doing complex business innovation challenges? And I said, because I'm actually ironically more suited for doing that than I probably am for an academic career. And the reason is that when you take a brain that's attuned to solving problems of that level of complexity, business innovation challenges suddenly become very easy. So I actually have kind of a strategic advantage almost in solving these types of problems. So that's one thing that's really interesting. And again, just aligning with what needs to be done. And I work through towards it. I managed to make some wonderful connections. And those are the people that I'm working with today to achieve some of these broader objectives.
Peter, of course, founded Ebtekar here. We'll find out more about that, what it has achieved, what it hopes to achieve in just a little while. But we've moved on to the third song. Tell us about this one.
Royal Crown Review. This was actually from a movie back in 1994, I believe, called The Mask. And this is one that if you don't get up out of your seats as you're listening to this and just move around, you're not alive. It's an amazing song.
We are in conversation right now with Dr. Peter Stoyanov. He's our first guest on Making Tracks. We're working through his career to date, from Australia to Germany, here to the UAE as well. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more coming. actor Peter Stoyanov is live with us here in the studio. Peter, I want to get we've moved all the way up to the UAE, arrived in 2015. Obviously, for those that are feverishly Google searching you at the moment as well, there is one brand name that comes up alongside you with good reason at the moment. That is Ebtekar. Now, that's your baby here in the UAE. When did you set that up?
So that was in 2016, and it was about 2 years into the journey of being here in Dubai. It was really a recognition or an understanding that businesses deal a lot with business challenges. And that's fine, but especially in this world of increasing uncertainty and increasing complexity, in the types of problems that businesses are facing, that I realized that I could actually help them, sort of incorporating what I'd done in my background as a scientist. And so Ebtekar actually means innovation in Arabic. It's the Arabic word for it. And so I decided, why not to create the logo, which actually has both the English and the Arabic for the same meaning. And so as it started, it was in 2016, and really what was central to that company was the message that we wanted to become the forefront of a movement in a new type of thinking, and that is in bringing scientific thinking to solve business innovation challenges. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of that missing piece, and I talked earlier about the golden thread. And that was finally when I cemented my understanding of how I can help businesses and governmental organizations in particular to succeed.
I suppose a lot of people listening in, and you obviously consult with a number of different industries and sectors as well, but a lot of people might be thinking, you know, one word that you've used throughout this whole thing, one of the other golden threads, is innovation, whether that be through technological or creative or whatever. Is every sector at the moment open for innovation? Because a lot of us are wired to think there's only the tech sectors that are the innovators at the moment.
So I recently finished a project just a few months ago with one of the most fundamentally uninnovative sectors, which is in real estate. And what was interesting about that was, prior to working with them, and actually there were a lot of big names that were going for that project, and myself and my small SWAT team, let's say, of subject matter experts actually went in and pitched a very different proposition. That was that these guys are selling you certainty, but the reality is that the world is uncertain, and anybody who's selling you certainty can't possibly know what the future is going to hold. Mm. So instead of selling certainty, what I do is I talk about uncertainty management, this process of managing the uncertainty that you're going to face. And so the point here is actually deconstructing success and failure. And this is kind of this big understanding that I had as a scientist that business people just don't get. And I will spend the rest of my life, having found now what my big why is, communicating this basic message. And it's the simplest idea in the world. This idea that you want to disentangle success and failure from your decision-making process. So think about it this way. If I choose to do something and I'm concerned with the probability of the outcome, with whether it's going to work or not, I'm thinking about the wrong things. Instead, what I should be doing is saying, if I make this decision and the outcome, a positive outcome, is so much larger than a small negative outcome, then I make that decision whether I'm going to succeed or fail. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And it's actually grounded in behavioral psychology and new economic thinking. So once I left the quantum physics books behind, I actually delved very deeply into behavioral economics and sort of this very deep economic thinking to try and understand. And then, as I like to do, to simplify these complex ideas. And I developed something called the SMART failure framework. Mm. And this is the idea of, again, separating yourself from success and failure, instead thinking about the economics of the decisions that you take, not the probabilities. And it's the simplest idea in the world. I'm happy to share it with your listeners. It's that the default state of anything that you do, if it's innovative, if it's something that you've never done before, it's a problem you've never faced or a solution you've never created, is that you're probably going to fail doing it the first time. Mm. So assuming that that's the case, then all you want to do is follow these three rules. Fail fast. So there's an essence of time. You want to make sure that if you're going to fail, you want to make it as quick as possible. Fail cheap, which means that you want that failure to cost you as little as possible. And the most important thing is to fail informatively, which means that when you make this decision, that given the default state is probably going to be failure, that you're able to learn as much as you can from it. And if you can learn as much as possible, so increase the learning and decrease the amount of time and the amount of money, as you probe this space of possibility in terms of your innovation program, then what you can actually do is ensure or maximize the chance of actually identifying the success. And this is precisely the framework that I work with businesses and also with large-scale governments. And this is where we make our impact.
I want to make time for your final song in just a moment's time. But obviously, opportunities come knocking left, right and centre. You are much sought after here in the region, but also internationally at the moment. And I must say a big thanks to all the team down at MENA Speakers as well. Peter is a professional speaker represented by the leading speakers bureau in the Middle East, MENA Speakers. Is that something that comes naturally to you? Is that something that you'll be doing more of in the future?
So I've already been doing quite a bit, and she will kill me if I don't give her a shout out. Sana Azam, aka Shazam. Now it's in the public record, Sana, and I know that you're listening, and you're welcome. So yeah, absolutely. I've been called all around the world. I just got back from China, I think a month and a half ago, speaking on the implications on the ethics of artificial intelligence. And what I talked about there, which was an interesting topic, is everybody's talking about human-level cognition in artificial intelligence. I take a very different and far more pragmatic scientific approach, I would say, which is they don't have to be as smart as us. They just need to be as good at what we do as we are. And then we're already...
Peter, we could talk for hours and hours and hours. This is the man that was nominated for the 2017 Arabian Business Mentor of the Year Award. His brand is Ebtekar. He's with MENA Speakers. He's based here in the UAE. The future's bright here. His future is huge. So make sure you get a reach out and find out more. I really appreciate your time this morning. It's been so kind. Joe, thanks very much indeed for setting this one up as well. Our thanks to Joe McKibben. Our thanks to Margus at the back there. And there's only one way to play out. It's with your fourth track of the afternoon. What is your final track, Peter?
Motherless Child. So this is a description of basically being away from home for a number of years now and sort of that yearning to come back to where it all started, which was at Melbourne with my parents back home in Australia. And I'm looking forward to visiting them later this year. It's been 3 years since I've been home.
Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much indeed to you for coming in and joining us on Making Tracks.
Thank you so much for having me, and delighted to be this first inaugural speaker on this on this segment. And I hope I've done justice for you guys. So
you have.
Thank
indeed.
You so much.
Dr. Peter Stoyanov is the founder of Ebtekar. Our thanks to him, and our thanks to all of you for getting involved. The news is coming up next. Not though, before a bit of John Legend. Goodbye.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. And sometimes I feel like a motherless child alone. Long way from home. Whoa. Now sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. And sometimes I feel, yeah, like I'm all alone.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.